Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Gaffney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God and his kingdom. I've spent most of my professional life, and we spend the preponderance of these programs, talking about totalitarianism. Most prominently, the greatest manifestation of that monstrous ideological practice in the world today, and that would be the Chinese Communist Party. We talk a fair amount about its globalist allies, those best known for their association with the World Economic Forum of Davos, and other oligarchs around the planet who think that they have a better idea for how we all should be ruled, which is by them. An ideological program, clearly totalitarian in character, that has gotten a lot less attention, frankly, even from me, in recent years, in the face of those other two, is one that has, I believe, not gone away by any means, and arguably has been advancing steadily, if stealthily, around the world in the past decade or so. We're going to talk about that ideology, and I use that term advisedly, with one of the men who has been, I think, doing an extraordinary job of illuminating it, of warning against it, and of trying to, well, mobilize those within his own community of the Muslim faith to stand against it. This practice has numerous terms. Some call it political Islam. Others describe it as Islamism. My friend Andy McCarthy coined the term Sharia supremacism, which I tend to think is apt, Sharia being the doctrine that, yes, has religious practices defined, but also enshrines much of the political agenda of its, shall we say, authoritative adherents, but by no means all Muslims, particularly in this country. Fortunately, standing for those latter Muslims is my good friend and valued colleague, senior fellow of our Center for Security Policy, among many other things, Dr. Zudi Jasser. He is, by training, an internal medicine practitioner, a man who has actually served in the United States Congress as one of the medical practitioners there, as part of his time in the United States Navy, in which he served with distinction. He is also the leader of several important initiatives, and we'll be talking about them in the course of this program. Thankfully, he's given us a full hour of his time, for which we are very grateful. They include the American Islamic Forum for Democracy, of which he is the president. Zudi Jasser, it is a delight to have you with us. Thank you for giving us so generously of your time to talk about both what we're up against in this vein and what you're doing about it, and more broadly, what is happening elsewhere around the world and here that should be of concern. It's a privilege to have some of your time, sir. Welcome back.
Thank you, Frank. It's always great to be with you. And sadly enough, the issue is more pertinent and more important than ever as the Islamists are growing, despite our attention being elsewhere in the past few years. So thanks for having me. And, yeah. And again, thanks so much for covering this.
Well, as I said, it's not been as often as it should be, and I hope to remedy that in the days ahead with your help again. Let me start by just asking you, as I'm fond of saying, to level set so that our audience has some sense of, well, the nature of the problem first and the magnitude of it. Talk, if you would, from the perspective particularly of a Muslim, a reformist Muslim, to be sure, about what we're talking about here and the nature of the challenge that it poses to, among others, people of your faith.
Yeah, I think it's so important that whenever we talk about whether it's jihadi groups, terrorists, Islamist radicals, but be it on the Sunni or the Shia side, that Americans take a historical understanding of what's happening within the faith of Islam. Unfortunately, whether it's our ADD news or whatever it is, we often take an ahistorical approach. But history, as far as Islam is concerned, the religion is a little over 1,440 years old. And when it comes to the arc of the faith, it has not gone through a reformation in which it recognizes individual rights, liberty. It has not gone through an enlightenment process. And basically, we are still pre-modern in our interpretation. So therefore, that separation of national identity, where Muslims in the Quran describe that as ummah, and faith identity, has not gone through a separation recognizing religious freedom. So therefore, the state, the Islamic state, if you will, is still the predominant understanding of what the role of Sharia or Islamic law is. And that's why if you look at almost every Muslim majority country, they might have differences between secular dictators or true and true theocrats. But at the end of the day, the legal systems, whether it's Assad or Khomeini in Iran, the legal system is Sharia based. And ultimately based on a cleric's interpretation of law. It's not based on common law, Western separation of church and state. That hasn't happened. So therefore, we need to, and our reform movement is about the need to, I'm a physician. I treat disease. We don't just cover up symptoms. The disease, the cancer in the Muslim world, historically so far in its arc, is that we have not separated mosque and state. National identity is about waving a green flag with the Quran on it. It's not about uniting communities based on regardless of their faith, like America is, where you're under God, you're not under one particular scriptural interpretation. And that's really what where we are historically and why there's such a deep cancerous problem all over the Muslim world. And not only radical groups, but top-down theocratic rule of countries like Iran, and their fealty for on the Sunni side for Islamist groups like the Muslim Brotherhood.
I wanted to go there next with you, Zudi. What you've just described is a formidable challenge indeed, and one that is made the more so because of its intolerance. I mean, you put it rather charitably. Religious freedom is not only dishonored, really, under this most restrictive of regimens. But those who actually have the temerity to stand against it, and that would include people of the Muslim faith like yourself, face real mortal peril. I mean, it's apostasy, the capital offense. People are entitled to act against you. So it makes all the more important, I think, your voice. And it's so appreciated that you are standing up against, among others, the Muslim Brotherhood. Tell us a bit about this group and what it is doing worldwide, including here in the United States.
Yeah, so the Muslim Brotherhood's project has been founded in Egypt. It basically is an Islamist grassroots movement, if you will, through the mosques to implement an Islamic state idea founded by Hassan al-Banna and then onward over the past 100 years. But it's not just 100 years. It's a movement that is core to Islamic governance and Sharia, as you say, Sharia supremacism. And it has had hundreds, if not thousands, of offshoots into Europe, into the United States, including organizations like the Council on American Islamic Relations, the Mothership, which I call the Islamic Society of North America, and so many other Islamic groups, that some of which are militant, like Al-Qaeda and ISIS and others, and some of which are non-militant or civilizational jihadists that use the law, are not anarchists, but yet use the law to infiltrate Western society. Not that they think they can take over countries where they're only 1% of the population. But,
Zudi, I have to interrupt you. Hold the thought. We'll be right back with more with Dr. Zudi Jasser right after this.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Have you heard that among the illegal immigrants taking advantage of Joe Biden's open border in recent months are thousands of physically fit, military-aged Chinese men carrying similar backpacks and seemingly moving in groups? While the Biden-induced migration of millions has been correctly characterized as an invasion, it appears Communist China is literally engaged in one. Based on observing these Chinese men firsthand, former special operator turned veteran combat reporter Michael Yan believes they're likely People's Liberation Army soldiers. If so, this is no drill. They will be capable of causing deadly mayhem here if the CCP starts a shooting war against us. Apparently, nothing is being done to interrogate or monitor, let alone arrest these individuals. To the contrary, like other illegal migrants, you're paying to disseminate them all over the country. Any lingering doubt about who Joe Biden is working for? This is Frank Affney.
We're back, and my apologies to you, as well as to Dr. Judy Jasser. I am rather preoccupied myself, I have to confess, with the Muslim Brotherhood, and as he was speaking about it, I was really carried away by his description of this so-called non-militant form of Sharia supremacism and the various groups that are associated with it in our country. And Zudi, my apologies to you most especially, because you were making an extremely important point about the nature of these guys and the argument that they're the kind of Muslims that we can do business with because they eschew violence. And in that connection, I just wanted to call attention to a book that's available for free at the Center for Security Policy's website, securefreedom.org. It's called The Explanatory Memorandum. And Zudi, I know you know its background. You might say a word about it and its contents as you pick up your narrative.
Yeah, and you know, the bottom line is these groups have splinter organizations that operate on different fronts. And one of the fronts is the PR arm, which many of them realize with the central global media being centered in Los Angeles, New York, London, and the West, they feel that they have to influence policy. So it's not about taking over Western countries where they're barely 1, 2% of the population in America, 12% max in France, but it's about influencing policy to make Western governments afraid and basically appease them to allow them to influence policy where they do have influence. And we saw this in spades after the Arab Awakening, where you had governments that were turned over because of what families like mine felt were long overdue pushback against dictatorship. But the Islamists filled that vacuum and brought an equally evil type of dictatorship. And I was on the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom in 2012 to 16. We went and met with the leadership in Egypt in 13. And I can tell you that they were draconian. They wanted to implement Sharia law. So when they have control, as we see in the mosques here in America, even internally, they institute and implement 13th century, at best, Islamic law and suppress women's rights, suppress any rights of dissent, etc. The explanatory memorandum you held basically is a meeting that became part of established information in a federal court indictment in the Holy Land Foundation that led to the imprisonment of 5 out of 6 of their board members. So that is actually not even disputed information. It became part of the FBI's database to show that that meeting said that their goal is to come to the West to influence policy and to steer America towards appeasement with Islamism and all of its offshoots in the West.
Yeah, I think one of the memorable terms was something like destroy its miserable house with their own hands, meaning the hands of those non-believers. And Zudi, I guess what you've just described is of such importance, and I apologize for not mentioning in my short rendering of your lengthy bio that you did indeed serve with great distinction on the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom and brought a, I think, very powerful voice of the Muslim reformists to those commission meetings and travels and representations, both external to the country and here in the United States. So thank you for all of that as well. I think what you were referring to was a visit you paid as part of the commission's work when the Muslim Brotherhood was actually running Egypt, right? The governments of Egypt have been a mixed bag, to say the least, but the Sharia supremacist moment was after, as part of the Arab Spring, with our help, the Muslim Brotherhood successfully took down a friendly government and replaced it with one that wanted, as you say, to impose full-throated Sharia on the country. And what was the response of the Egyptian people to that?
The response was to even rebel more, to have a larger revolution in the streets of Cairo. Within 12 months of the Muslim Brotherhood taking over in June 2013, people of Egypt went to the streets twice, two, three times more than they did against Mubarak 12 months later. And the government again went to the wayside, and you had the al-Sisi government then come after that. So bottom line is Muslims, left to their own devices, do not want Islamists running their shops, do not want to live under Sharia law from the majority perspective. But the large plurality of united Islamists is a major force that without the help of without helping reformers, because I'll tell you, one of the toughest meetings I had when I went to Egypt was with our ambassador to Egypt, who was Obama's ambassador, who was basically yelling at me, telling me, who am I to tell Egyptians what government they want? And the Obama administration was going to basically acknowledge democratically elected governments. And I said, well, Hamas is democratically elected. They are still on the list of terrorist organization, and they're basically the Muslim Brotherhood in the Palestinian areas. So why is this any different? We should stand by the values that are American. But the far left progressivists in bed, in cahoots with theocrats across the world, seem to think that they in a bigoted way tell us Muslims what type of government we want. And to them, majoritocracy, mobocracy, is their definition of liberalism and democracy, when in fact it isn't.
Yeah. Gosh, there's so many different ways to go from here. Zudi, I guess where I might start with, you mentioned that Barack Obama's ambassador to Egypt was very much not only challenging of your authority, but actually taking the line that he was going to, revile, I guess, really, your authority to speak for Muslims. This is a very, I think, hardy perennial, it seems, of the Obama-Biden administrations. And I personally believe we're in the third of those administrations at the moment. And I wanted to ask you, to the extent that the Muslim Brotherhood is, in fact, an entity that is promoting stealthily, as you put it, a Sharia supremacist agenda, what is the extent of its penetration of the current Obama-Biden 3.0, if you will, or the Biden administration at the moment? And to what extent is that impinging still on the ability of people like yourself to be heard and to express the views of, I think you're absolutely right, the majority of American Muslims, among others?
Yeah, I mean, to the extent that the Obama administration tried to pretend that they valued diversity and multiple different ideas when it came to the Muslim community, which was a farce, if you will, a facade. Now the Biden administration is completely in bed with the Islamists. There's not even a attempt to try to demonstrate that. I mean, their appointment to the seat that I had on the U.S. Commission now is Mohammed Majid, who is the head of the Islamic Society of North America, who
the mothership, as you put it.
Yeah, the mothership of the Muslim Brotherhood, who clearly has said nothing against Islamism and actually has facilitated the rise and influence of Islamist leaders in the West. And actually, all you need to do is look at Biden policies. The Biden administration policies when it comes to Iran, when it comes to Qatar, when it comes to Egypt. And our approach to many of these regimes and the Islamist influence has been, without exception, to cater to, right now, last week, they want to give $6 billion to the Iranian regime to pay off terrorists in order to get five of our own Americans back. And they're handing back folks who are terrorists that we've had in prison here in the United States. So that's not only, not to mention, even more importantly, the allowing of the ascension of the nuclear program as their time to bomb is getting closer and closer. And
that's a point on which I want to turn next, if we can. Zuhdi Jasser, please hold the thought once more. We have to take a break. We'll be right back with more with Dr. Zuhdi Jasser, the president of the American Islamic Forum for Democracy. Stay tuned.
Night after night, in cities across the country, black-garbed assailants clash with police in the streets, smash windows, and throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
We're back, and we're continuing a very important conversation with Dr. Zuhdi Jasser, a medical doctor by training, by avocation, a leader in the fight for a future for Islam that is not locked into some of its darkest past, specifically an alternative to the kind of Sharia supremacism that has made authoritative Islam for many, many centuries a force for, well, totalitarian domination in an era where that is certainly not desirable and, in fact, very dangerous to the rest of us and to moderate Muslims like Dr. Jasser. He chronicles all of this brilliantly in a very important book entitled The Battle for the Soul of Islam, an American Muslim's patriot's fight to save his faith. Dr. Jasser, you were talking about how we've seen the Biden administration in sort of the third incarnation, as I say, of the Obama-Biden presidencies, pushing forward with a very dubious deal, I guess maybe even several deals, with the theocratic extremist Sharia supremacist government of Iran, albeit of the Shia stripe rather than the Sunni. Give us a sense from your perspective of what the policies that have been pursued to this point, to say nothing of specifically this latest deal of a $6 billion ransom payment for five Americans held by the mullahs, what that means. Well, most obviously for ordinary Americans who I think now have a price on all of their heads, but also for that battle for the soul of Islam, as you see it, sir.
Yeah, I mean, we talk to reformers in Iran, in Europe, and across the world that are Iranian activists, that are anti-Islamist, anti-Khomeinist, and I can't tell you how abandoned they feel. Mahsa Amini was murdered by the regime, and it sparked demonstrations across the country that are still smoldering when they're able to.
Frank, and by the way, she was murdered over the lack of concealment of her hair, as I recall. Is that right?
Yep. And the regime is digging in their heels about the hijab. They will not let this go. It is their flag. And they have imprisoned almost 25,000 Iranians in the past year, murdered over 600, imprisoned and tortured countless more. And the bottom line is the Biden administration has said nothing in support of them. And now the Iranian people are seeing American ships that Iran is basically telling them where to go. They're seeing billions of dollars handed to their oppressors. They're seeing a nuclear program, which they keep telling them from the streets, telling our Biden administration, telling them the best anti-nuclear program is to help us, not to let this regime do what you think can be ransomed out. That's not how you deal with terrorists. And they're doing a lot more courageous. And what's going to happen is they're going to turn elsewhere, which is not in America's interest or in the interests of humanity, human rights, which supposedly the left cares about, but clearly they don't. And it is one of the worst. We're seeing a significant increase in American risks. And we have, through our open border, we're seeing Hezbollah and other types of radical terrorist groups connected to Iran spread. And Iran has gotten much closer to China and Russia. And bottom line is the Biden administration has not only been asleep, it's been facilitating the rise of anti-American authoritarian regimes like the Islamists, and also suppressing and smoldering supposedly the movements that they care the most about, the feminist movements, that I cannot tell you how negative they are about the Biden administration.
Yeah, well, and rightly so. Zudi, I talked about tectonic shifts. The throwing in again with the mullahs, obviously in opposition to their own people, but also at odds with several of our other most important friends and allies in the region, notably Israel and Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, the like. That's causing ripple effects. There's a lot of talk at the moment that after, well, nearly 3 years of hectoring the Saudis and vilifying their government, and I know you have your differences with that government as well, but it's which has driven them into the arms of the Chinese as well. There's now talk about the United States trying to broker some sort of deal between Israel and the Saudis, which seems to, at least in part, have as a requirement that there be some new lifting up of the jihadis of the Palestinian community. I mean, give us, you know, your perspective on what is happening in these areas downstream from the misbegotten, ill-considered, ill-advised policies towards Iran.
Yeah, I can't tell you how problematic and disastrous it's been, the walk back of the great strides that the Trump administration made through the Abraham Accords and the opening of dialogue and clear, unmistakable recognition of Israel by countries like Bahrain and the Emirates and others, as that was beginning to increase in its tempo when, unfortunately, the Trump administration ended and Biden then came in and wouldn't even use the term Abraham Accords because somehow they thought that that was problematic when, in fact, that was again proved the influence of Islamists and the Ilhan Omars of the far left influencing even the language that the White House used. But at the end of the day, the Saudis, I think, you know, my position on that is clearly there. You can't switch from a monarchy that's a Sharia state into a democracy overnight. If they walked away, you'd have a state like ISIS in Saudi Arabia. There's no doubt. That's sort of the cauldron that they created. But having said that, I have a podcast called Reform This that I do weekly. And my last one was about, it was basically, you can't reform Islam through whiteout. And yes, they are removing the anti-Semitic parts of some of the scripture that we had asked them to remove in their translations. They are recognizing Israel and coming to the table and looking at economic interests. That's very significant steps forward and progress. But you also, as you get closer and as we become closer friends with them, we can also demand more of our friends and demand more transparency and actual reform. So actual reform is not just by removal, but by saying, okay, we recognize Israel because Islam and Judaism and humanity are equal. And they haven't done that yet theologically. It's simply sort of a mafioso type approach to reform, which is better than the Islamists, but it's still not an American way of reform, which the Biden administration has robbed us of being able to have with them at arm's length. Instead, has just been lobbing hate speech towards the Saudis, which is really not a way to build friends, and is pushing them to the Russians, is pushing them to the Chinese, which is really what they're doing. And actually, Israel, to its own interest, is doing its own deals with Saudi Arabia, because the Biden administration is completely, again, missing in action.
At best. And as you say, it's not just asleep. It seems mostly complicit with the wrong side. And I wondered whether, just going back to what we were talking about with the Muslim Brotherhood a moment ago, Zudi, that there's not the hand of the Brotherhood in the hostility towards the Saudi regime, among other things, because the Saudis, as I understand it, under the Crown Prince, Mohammed bin Salman, have more or less broken with the Brotherhood. Is that correct?
Oh, completely. And the Saudis, despite 50 years of facilitating through institutes like Georgetown's Muslim Christian Center Understanding, etc., abandoned that in 2017 during the Trump administration, put the princes that were involved in funding Islamism globally in the Ritz-Carlton prison for a few months until they agreed to seize those funds and stop the funding of Muslim Brotherhood entities across the world, and basically declared war on the Muslim Brotherhood domestically and globally. And that has ruptured completely. So we can either ignore that, or we can celebrate that and say, okay, finally, they realized the toxin that they were spreading through funding mosques in the West and elsewhere based on Islamist movements, and begin to say, okay, where are you going to direct that? I'm one that believes that it's not going to be directed towards simply inviting Beyonce and the Wrestling Federation into Saudi Arabia or PGA partnerships. That's not going to reform the ideology that radicalized our communities. But at the end of the day, at least they're not spending it on Islamists. So we made some progress, and they're beginning to, you know, I think we need to push them into the types of sermons that are getting. I mean, look at Turkey, one of the world's strongest influencers of Islamists. They drive sermons across the planet through their Diyanet, where the government hands imams in Turkey and elsewhere the sermons they should be giving in the Baltimore Mosque and in Istanbul. And that's the kind of stuff we should be working against. And the so-called anti-Islamist regimes like Saudi Arabia should begin to expose on the influence that it has on our faith community across the world.
Yeah, I want to come back to Turkey in a moment, maybe on the other side of a very short break we have to take in just a minute. But one other tell in terms of efforts to improve the Saudi position on, well, Sharia supremacism under Mohammed bin Salman is apparently they've cleaned up some of the textbooks as well. You mentioned some of the texts of, I guess, translations of the Quran itself. But this is another thing that I know you, I think, and others certainly on the International Religious Freedom Commission had long campaigned for. They had been promising to do it for many years, and successive editions of the text were unchanged. But apparently, especially those that they're now using to teach in the West, seem to have been improved somewhat as it relates to jihad in particular. We'll come back in a moment with more with Dr. Zudi Jasser about France as well as Turkey. Stay tuned.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Have you heard that among the illegal immigrants taking advantage of Joe Biden's open border in recent months are thousands of physically fit, military-aged Chinese men carrying similar backpacks and seemingly moving in groups? While the Biden-induced migration of millions has been correctly characterized as an invasion, it appears Communist China is literally engaged in one. Based on observing these Chinese men firsthand, former special operator turned veteran combat reporter Michael Yan believes they're likely People's Liberation Army soldiers. If so, this is no drill. They will be capable of causing deadly mayhem here if the CCP starts a shooting war against us. Apparently, nothing is being done to interrogate or monitor, let alone arrest these individuals. To the contrary, like other illegal migrants, you're paying to disseminate them all over the country. Any lingering doubt about who Joe Biden is working for? This is Frank Affney.
We're back, and Zudi Dresser is still with us, I'm pleased to say. He is one of the leading voices for reform within Islam inside the United States. One of the functions of his American Islamic Forum for Democracy, but also not one but two different groups that he has helped come together, Muslim Reform Movement and a program that is called the Clarity Coalition. The first involving Muslims, of course, the second non-Muslim as well as Muslim constituency. And we'll hear more about that in the next block. But Zudi, before we go there, I just did want to complete your sort of tour de raison of the Middle East and how U.S. policies are perhaps further strengthening the Sharia supremacist movements. We've talked about Iran. We've talked about some progress in Saudi Arabia. We've talked about some setbacks in Israel. Talk a little bit more about Turkey and its role now with the Saudis having broken with the Brotherhood. What exactly is it that Recep Tayyip Erdogan, the president of Turkey, is doing for them in the Saudi stead?
Well, make no mistake, Recep Erdogan is basically entrenching himself as the caliph, if you will, globally of the Islamist movement. Turkey is, even though economically it's having significant problems internally, it's still rife with a significant amount of money it's putting into the Islamist movement. And if you look at the Muslim Brotherhood groups, be it the part of the rebellion in Syria that were pushed out of Egypt, and that are running the media arm of Al Jazeera out of Qatar, they have found no greater home than in Istanbul and in work with Turkey. So that axis of Turkey, Qatar, the Taliban, and with fealty to Iran on the Shia side has really sort of entrenched itself now as sort of the grassroots center, if you will, mothership globally of the Islamist movement. And they're pushing back against Gulf states, against some of the dictators, military dictatorships, el-Sisi and others. And it's creating a new division in the Middle East that's very different than when it was in the middle of the 20th century. And as a result, is probably one of our most significant threats, because really the future is about the war of ideas, Frank. And the war of ideas when it comes to Turkish television, Al Jazeera, is driving Arab, Persian, you know, Farsi, Turkish language media that's influencing Islamists and putting us reformers to shame in the amount of resources they have, even more so than before when the Saudis were funding it.
No question. Zudi, I promised we would talk about France, and I do want to. Could you just take a minute and talk about one other particularly sinister development, which is with the surrender of Afghanistan to the Taliban? The administration has created another mecca for particularly the violent jihadists, if I can use that expression, mecca, but a locus in which they can operate as they did before, you know, 9/11. No,
it's again proof that the Islamists are running the shop in the White House and in Washington with the Democrats, because there's no reason to look at influence in countries like Afghanistan in a binary way. Either we're doing nation building or we completely evacuate the place, like, you know, we don't even want one influence there. So it was crazy the way we pulled out not only the terrorism against that killed our 14 service members, but at the end of the day, we no longer have eyes on the ground. There should be significant military intelligence there, and it is being handed to the most radical elements, not only of that country, but if you look at the region in which Afghanistan sits, we have lost a significant amount of eyes and ears to Pakistan, to a lot of the other regions, Iran and elsewhere on the border, that we have lost the ability to influence. And they told us women would be able to go to school, et cetera. It only took 6 to 12 months in which the Taliban has ratcheted back to circa 1,200. And all of that was complete fabrication.
Circa 1,200 plus an $83 billion superpower armaments supply, unfortunately. So Zudi, that brings us to parts of the world closer to our own, more similar in many ways to our own. France has been beset of late with violent activities over much of the country, arising from an incident involving a young Algerian immigrant. What's going on there now? What do you think it portends?
Yeah, I think France has in some ways been ahead of us in which you've had the you know, President Macron making speeches month after month for a while, and that he talked about the inability and the lack of desire of a French national identity to harbor separatists like Islamists. And they've used the right language over time. So in some ways, almost again, like treating a cancer, patients will get sicker before they get better. There was sort of this brewing antagonism, not just with conservatives as we look at them in America, but really with French laïcité. You know, the laïcité policy is about secularism, is about a French identity that rejects theocracies, if you will. And what happened is they're similar to the Black Lives Matter movement that started burning our cities, that rioting and destroying our federal you know, monuments, et cetera. And this is what we saw with simply one arrest a month or so ago in France. And this is a powder keg because they have 12% of their population that's Muslim, that many of whom live in neighborhoods that have very little interaction with non-Muslim areas around them. So it's going to get much worse before it gets better.
So-called no-go zones by some, certainly places that have become festering sores, I think, in the society. And there are those who believe that, you know, this leads inexorably to civil war because the, you know, Sharia supremacists in their midst seem set on nothing less. And the government may be talking a good game, I'm not sure, but they've not been doing much in the way of policy to try to prevent this problem from metastasizing further, to use your metaphor of cancer. Dr. Jasser, we have to take one final break. When we come back, I want to ask you to talk more about your own efforts to reform Islam here in the United States with fellow Muslims, but also with non-Muslims, and how people can help you do that. We'll be right back with that and more right after this. We're back for the final segment of this hour-long conversation with a man I've come to admire greatly for his clarity as well as his courage, and talking about a problem within his own faith community that is, again, political Islam, Islamism, Sharia supremacism, call it what you will, jihadism. It is a threat not just to those of us who are not Muslim, but I believe also to the vast majority of Muslims in America who don't want to live under the strictures of the ancient traditions of Islam codified in Sharia. So, Dr. Jasser, you have the American Islamic Forum for Democracy, you have the Muslim Reform Movement, you have now the Clarity Coalition. Talk about what you're doing with these various entities and what people who share your desire to have Muslims live and prosper in America alongside the rest of us, enjoying freedom of religion, but not trying to impose theirs on us or otherwise exhibit a kind of totalitarian control that Sharia seems to mandate.
Yeah, you know, we've continued to make steady progress in our Muslim Reform Movement. And our Muslim Reform Movement, and you can see at our website, MuslimReformMovement.org, the founders, the leaders of that, is really focused on truly countering the theological interpretations, providing alternative 21st century interpretations of the role of what we interpret as our version of Sharia, if you will, for pietistic reasons, and our declaration, which we would ask people to look at. It's the Muslim Reform Movement Declaration that is simply a page and a half of a list of principles that I think could be used as a firewall to separate who would be the allies of Western democracy versus those who are the enemies, who are the Islamists of West, and our antagonist against Western democracy. But the bigger thing, we found that some Muslims really don't want to get into the theology, but yet they want to support what we do, not to mention non-Muslims who aren't part of the theology, but want to also work against jihad. And we said, let's form a coalition. We called it the Clarity Coalition, which stands for Champions of Liberty Against Radical Islamist Tyranny. And that website, you can see the growing number of leaders. I think we're up to 40 or so, claritycoalition.org. And basically that gives a larger sphere, if you will, to those who are feminists, secularists, secular humanists, and those of you like the Center for Security Policy and the Investigative Project, the Middle East Forum, and all these other groups that have been very active in the anti-jihad sphere that really have not had an organized way to together unite our resources and work together to build platforms for reformists and non-Muslims to work together. We had a meeting in Austria in October in which we had a three-day session rolling up our sleeves and talking about what we can do to advocate for, like we made a statement right afterwards supporting the women's movement in Iran, like you and I talked about earlier. So there's a lot happening in that sphere. People can go to the website to see statements that we're making as a coalition. And it's really provided an avenue to also take off our reform movement, because people have now felt comfortable to join us without feeling that they have to be leaders in Quranic interpretation in order to be Muslim reformers, but simply about protecting Western security and freedom.
And that of individual believers as well. I mean, it's yes. It's not freedom in the abstract. It's personal freedom as well, which especially, as you've said throughout the program, Dr. Jasser, is not much in evidence for most especially women, but also for people of other faiths under these theocratic regimes, or even the at least nominally secular ones that nonetheless have a Sharia-rooted constitution or, you know, legal system. I guess in closing, Dr. Jasser, when you look at the arc of history here, you're up against a lot of it. Much of it is pretty harsh as well, and unforgiving to those who would try to shift the trajectory of Islam. I think there's clearly a desire on the part of countless numbers of non-Muslims for such a shift. What are you finding with respect to your co-religionists? As you say, there's a community within the faith that are a little bit insecure about Quranic interpretations and the like. Excuse me. There's a community that is... My wife is knocking about. I apologize. there is within the faith a community of people who are concerned about, you know, their credentials as Islamic scholars, shall we say. But you're appealing to them as individuals and as, well, human beings. How are you finding the response within Islam at the moment?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, when we, whether it's behind the scenes or publicly, they're realizing that movements that are the most potent against theocrats, as we see in Iran or in any of the areas where we have the freedom to speak up, you don't need credentials. There's no classic clergy in Islam. Those are pseudo clergy. So if you look to history, as you said, you know, history has shown that it's the laity that will ultimately put the clergy in their place. And whether it's reform in Europe, in which Christian Reformation, it was a bloody endeavor during Enlightenment and before, for the clergy to be put, the establishment, if you will, of the faith to be put into their place. And that's really where we are in Islam right now. It's going to get a lot bloodier before it gets calmer. And we have to unite with those who share our values and ultimately have the debate when necessary, but also show their principles that we believe in, because we've learned about them living in America, living in France, living in the West, and understanding what the reality is of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and especially our Constitution. And I want to end on reminding especially my conservative friends, as we see sometimes they pull for the lowest hanging fruit and work with Muslims on, you know, the bizarre wokeism that's happening in America with transgender rights and the suppression of the reality of there being two sexes and all this other stuff. It's, they need to vet the groups they're working with and not basically ignore their anti-Semitism, their anti-Westernism, anti-Americanism, their Sharia supremacism, and say, well, because they agree with us on this slight sliver of an issue, we're going to work with them. That's not conservatism.
Yeah. It's not, and it's possibly very dangerous indeed. Dr. Juzi Jasser, thank you for the great work you do with the American Islamic Forum for Democracy. I know you'll keep it up, and I hope you'll come back to us again soon. I hope the rest of you will do the same again next time. Until then, go forth and multiply.